She'll please call the next case.
The second case on the calendar is A23-1062, State of Minnesota Respondent v. Lisa Dawn Oliver Appellant.
Thank you. Good morning, counsel. And as you both know, I think we have 15 minutes for your principal argument with an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal for appellant's counsel. There is a timer on the center podium. When you begin, please make sure to state your name and identify your client. We are recording the argument today, and the recording will be available on the court's website within 24 hours. And feel free to adjust the podium as well. So with that, attorney for appellant, you may begin when you are ready.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is John Donovan. I'm an assistant state public defender, and I represent the appellant in this case, Lisa Oliver. Ms. Oliver was convicted of two offenses based on an attack on her ex-boyfriend, attempted first-degree assault, and a completed second-degree assault. I raised two issues in my brief challenging the attempted first-degree assault conviction, but my argument this morning is going to focus on the first issue, whether attempted first-degree assault is a crime under Minnesota law. For a few reasons, this court should hold that it is not. First, we know that the legislature intended to exempt assaults from the attempt statute based on the definition of the offense. The statutory definition of assault includes both the infliction of bodily harm and the attempted infliction of bodily harm.
But in this case, the charge was limited to actual harm, not attempted harm. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So does that change the calculus of the discussion?
Not at all. Because the argument is that that crime doesn't exist. An attempted first-degree assault
It doesn't
harm.
Exist as to an assault that's a harmed assault?
No, Your Honor.
And why is that?
Well, a few reasons. First of all, because that attempted assault is already within the statutory definition of assault, that shows the legislature wants to treat...
You're talking in circles. The charge here wasn't attempted assault. The charge here was harm assault.
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right.
So I'm not trying to talk in circles.
Why does your argument about attempting an attempt apply to a situation where the charge of assault was harm assault as opposed to an attempted harm?
I'm not arguing about an attempt of an attempt. What I'm trying to set forth is that the definition of assault already includes an attempted harm assault. And so from that, we know that the legislature wanted to treat attempted assaults the same way as a completed offense. It wants to remove it from Section 60917.
Why do we conclude the legislature included or meant the same thing? It just listed various ways of committing the crime.
It's various ways of committing a crime, but sort of like in the non-precedential case I cited in my brief, when we have it where the legislature is defining an offense as the completed offense or the attempted version, what it shows is it wants to treat attempts the same way as a completed offense.
I would argue that doesn't show anything like that. It's simply the legislative determination of various ways of committing a crime. They don't have to be equal, do they?
Well, but they do, because it's already included an attempt within the offense definition. And sort of maybe the other way to get there is to look at this, is to say, okay, if it's an assault harm, if it's an attempted assault harm, what we need then is we need the mens rea to line up. An attempt is a specific attempt crime. And so if you want to have an attempt on something like this, you need to have those mens reas match up. For assault harm, that's a general intent crime. All you need to do is intend the act. There's no mens rea attached to the harm. It doesn't matter if you want that result at all. But the point of an attempt is that you want to achieve a particular result. And that's the problem that we have when we try to say attempted first degree assault harm, is that we don't have this alignment in the mens rea. There's a contradictory joinder of the elements there. Which
I don't know that it's contradictory. I don't know why we couldn't have general intent and specific intent at the same time.
The problem is when we attach this harm, which has no intent element whatsoever. That's where the problem lies. If you just want to say an attempted assault is a crime, I don't want to keep going into it. I would say it's just a regular assault based on the statutory definition, but okay. But there is no mens rea to the harm. That's where we have that misalignment, is you have a specific intent piece on the attempt, a general intent piece on the assault, but nothing at all related to the harm. The statute punishes first degree assault as whoever commits an assault and inflicts great bodily harm. It's not about intending great bodily harm. And Fleck lays that out very clearly. You don't have to intend any particular result. You only need to intend the act.
The instruction that went to the jury here was on the harm.
I'm sorry?
On the harm, assault, as a general intent statute.
So the instruction...
Is that how this instruction went to the jury?
First, the defendant intended to commit the crime of assault in the first degree of first bodily harm. This requires that the defendant attempted to assault Preston Lintz and to inflict great bodily harm. So they have to intend to inflict great bodily harm. And that's where we run into the problem. That's what Zupetz is about. That's what Schmitz is about, is they're saying, you can't just change the mens rea of something by wanting to make it an attempt. If there is, you know, in that case, it was culpable negligence. They're saying you can't just change this to specific intent because that's what an attempt is. When you have that specific attempt crime of attempt, it needs to match up. And it's the same here. The offense of assault harm inflicts great bodily harm doesn't have mens rea on that harm. And so even though the state presents evidence of that, that doesn't change it, and that there's no mens rea there, and it doesn't match up. And that's the problem here. Is Minnesota really has a policy on wanting to punish what you did, not what you intended. And that's how these assaults are statutes are written. Again, they're not written with and intend to inflict great bodily harm. As the court in Fleck noted, if that's what they wanted, then they could have written the statute to have these special mental elements there. But they didn't. They're only concerned about the harm that you inflict. That's what they want to punish, and which is another reason why attempt shouldn't apply here. That's sort of a policy statewide in Minnesota. That's how you want to punish things. Not what you intend, but what you did. To sort of give an example outside of this, with drug crimes, it's based on the amount that you possessed. If someone had 26 grams of meth, they're guilty of second-degree possession of a controlled substance. If they thought they had 51 grams, we wouldn't charge them with attempted first-degree possession because that's what they wanted. We charge them based on what they did. And it's the same here with assault. It's not what you're intending, it's what you inflict. So you could have attempted assault second degree. You could have attempted assault fifth degree. But since there's no mens rea, we can't attach it to these ones that are based on the amount of harm.
There's always mens rea for an attempt crime, though, right? Because it's whoever with intent to commit a crime.
Yes. And that's the problem, is because what you need for an attempt is intent to commit a particular crime. You want to intend a particular result. But first degree assault, great bodily harm, doesn't have any mens rea for what you're intending. And that's where the disconnect is that you can't just plug that in and say, okay, we're changing the element of the offense. That's why Zupetz wouldn't change it. That's why Schmitz wouldn't change it. They were saying that the element is what the element is. And if you're going to attach attempt to it, then they need to match. But they just don't match here. I think just another reason, briefly, for why this doesn't work here is because it exaggerates the criminality of an offense that's actually committed. We're not saying that Miss Oliver didn't commit any offense. We are not challenging her completed second-degree assault with a dangerous weapon inflicting substantial bodily harm. That offense is still there. We're not challenging that conviction. But that's the crime that she committed. That carries a sentence of 21 months. But when the state tries to make an element of intent to commit some greater assault...
What charges went to the jury, both the attempt and the second degree?
In an attempted second degree intentional murder, she was acquitted of. Attempted first degree assault, and then completed second degree assault, dangerous weapon, substantial bodily harm.
And that last charge resulted in a guilty verdict as well?
Yes. She was convicted of that.
So what we have on the record is a non-accepted verdict on the last charge.
It's the warrant of commit says there's a conviction. Mintz has said there was no adjudication. We're not challenging that if this conviction were reversed. If there isn't a conviction,
it would go back for sentencing on the second degree assault conviction.
Correct. That is not an issue on appeal today. But again, that's the offense she committed. And that offense carries a penalty of 21 months. But because the state is claiming she wanted to do something worse.
Carries a penalty of 21, you mean sentencing guidelines 21 months?
Correct. Of second degree assault.
Yes.
But the sentence she has for attempted first degree assault, for a level of harm she didn't inflict, is 43 months. And so what this has is now, if we can say that attempted harm crimes are, you know, can be punished if it is a crime.
Effectively, it doubled the exposure to under the sentencing guidelines.
Exactly. Even though that sentence is halved, the halved is still doubled the second degree assault. And so now we're punishing people if they actually inflict a level of harm that the state says that they want it to. And we're punishing people even if they don't inflict that level of harm, but the state says you wanted to inflict that level of bodily harm. You could commit a fifth degree misdemeanor assault, but if the state says, oh, but you wanted to create a high probability of death, that's attempted first degree assault because you intended that. That's not how these statutes are written. These statutes are based on the amount of harm you actually inflicted.
So what's the danger of this situation existing? Is it prosecution manipulation?
I think so, Your Honor. You could be charging these greater crimes, hoping that, you know, you're going to get this for another one. Again, it's now creating, it's changing the policy of how these statutes were written, where you can have these longer sentences, even though you're not inflicting the level of harm, which is what the legislature
is. But isn't that just prosecutorial discretion? I mean, that, you know, when a prosecutor gets these cases, they can decide how to charge them. And they have some ability to charge, you know, some things and not others. So I think that our statutory framework allows for that.
And it does, Your Honor. And I'm not saying that someone is going to necessarily be vindictive, but you can make something greater than it was in my sort of fifth degree attempted first degree example.
But what you're saying is that the legislature didn't intend that this kind of situation ought to occur. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, Your Honor. And that's what the Supreme Court says in Fleck, in that if they wanted to punish your intent for harm, they would have written the statute differently. They didn't. All they want to have the mens rea attached to is the act itself.
So in terms of applying your logic, then why do we allow attempted first or attempted murder charges? It's the same, isn't it the same thing where we have, have to prove a specific intent to achieve a particular result. The result wasn't achieved in those cases.
No, in second degree intentional murder, you do have to have that specific intent to cause death.
No. Yeah, for attempted murder, right?
So second degree intentional murder already requires the specific intent to cause death. The attempt matches because you have that same specific intent. Second degree intentional murder, first degree intentional murder, those are specific intent crimes where you want to achieve the particular result of death. So it works there because they're specific, because the whole point of those crimes is you want to achieve a particular result. Same thing with attempt. You want to commit a particular crime and
but
bring about a particular
result. But your argument is that the assault statute is based, instead of on intent, is based upon the kind of harm.
Correct. You don't intend a harm. You intend an act. And so if she'd been convicted,
stuck with the consequences of your act.
Yes, exactly. And that's what Dorn says, where in Dorn, she just pushed someone. He fell into a fire and suffered, you know, great bodily harm from his burns. She just shoved him. But the Supreme Court said, doesn't matter. You shoved him, you committed that, you know, intentional, you know, battery. So whatever the harm is, that's what results. And so if she had
That it works the other way though. I mean, what you're saying is that if you shove someone and it didn't, or it, I think going back to the attempted, let's say I'm gonna hit you with something, you know,
yeah.
I attempt to do it, I swing and I miss, it doesn't make what I did any less. I'm not less culpable for the attempt to harm somebody.
No, because what you did in that case, this is sort of where I'm not trying to go in circles. What you did then is an assault. If you, and I think that's what in the definition of assault, an attempted assault is. If you swing and miss, the statutory definition of assault is the infliction of bodily harm or the attempted infliction of bodily harm. What you did there, if you swing and miss, you have just committed an assault, not an attempt to assault. A full-on assault. And if, you know, if it was a hammer, that's a completed second-degree assault because you had a dangerous weapon, assuming that's proved. And that's something that we do want to punish more severely, but there's no harm that you're intending there, and so that piece doesn't factor in. So it's not an attempted assault in that 60917 attaches. It's a completed assault because 609.10, the definition, or 12 subdivision 10, defines that act as an assault. And so we still have people culpable when they do that. A swing and a miss, a shot fired, but you miss someone. Those are assaults under the definition of that word in the statute. So, My time is almost up. If the panel has no further questions, I think the only thing that I would add is that I didn't say it in my brief, but I would ask this court consider issuing a precedential opinion in this matter so we have some guidance on attempted assaults going.
Thank you. And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. So turning to counsel for respondent, we'll reset the clock. Please introduce yourself and identify your client at the beginning, and you can begin when you are ready.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Heather Pippenhagen. I am an assistant Dakota County attorney, and I'm here on behalf of the respondent, in this case, the state of Minnesota. The appellant in this case is asking the court to hold, as a matter of law, that attempted assault in the first degree, and by extension, attempted assault in the third degree, is not a crime under Minnesota law. And alternatively, appellant is asking this court to find, if that is an offense, that the facts were not sufficient to support that offense. So starting as a backdrop, I want to start with Minnesota Statute 609.17, the attempt statute that the legislature enacted. And they enacted this statute to provide for a substantive criminal offense when a defendant specifically intends to commit a crime, takes a substantial step towards committing that crime, even if the crime is not completed. But if one accepts appellant's argument in this case, in any assault cases involving harm or even attempted harm, then a defendant can only be completed of the committed offense based on the harm actually inflicted.
Counsel, isn't that consistent with the statute, assault statute, that being that for first degree assault, for you to be convicted, there's great bodily harm. For second degree, it's substantial bodily harm. So didn't the legislature within the statute contemplate that that level of harm dictates the level of offense?
Correct. On completed assaults, if you're talking about a completed assault, first degree assault, the state has to prove great bodily harm was inflicted. A completed third degree assault,
but
the
counsel,
state has
again,
to prove.
Again, in the first degree statute, or the assault statute, it's the infliction of harm or the attempted infliction. Isn't that a completed assault in and of itself? That attempted, the attempted language is in the first degree statute or in the assault statute. So you can't complete assault by either actually assaulting someone, that being if, for example, I punched someone or and they fell and they, you know, got a concussion or something. Or I can complete assault by I swing a hammer, I missed. But still, because I'm swinging a hammer, that's an assault. Aren't those both the attempt as well as the assault, both assaults under the statute?
The definition of the term assault and the simple crime of a simple assault does include an attempt to commit an assault or an assault harm. In this case, we're talking about an assault harm.
So we take that, it has both the assault and the attempt, the assault. Then we go to the next step. The level of assault is based on the harm, right? So I complete an assault by either attempting the assault or assaulting. And then the determination of whether or not it's first, second, third, or fourth degree, the statute contemplates is based on the level of harm, with the exception of, I believe, I'm not recalling one of them, is if you assault a peace officer, and then I believe second degree is if you use a weapon.
Correct. So if it's an attempted assault and there is no evidence of any intent to commit any specific level of harm, then you're left with just a simple fifth degree assault, just a simple misdemeanor assault. If you can't prove any specific intent to inflict a higher level of harm. And what our argument is the legislature enacted an attempt statute so that you can attach criminal liability and it creates the substantive offense. If you have the specific intent to commit a higher level of harm. And under the appellant's argument, You could never have that. You can only have a first and a third degree assault if you have a completed offense. So essentially it says there's no accountability for what you intended to do, no matter how much evidence we have that you specifically intended a completely different result. And this is totally contrary to the whole point of 609.17. And it's not consistent with public policy. And really what appellant's arguing is, I don't like the attempt statute. You should only be held accountable for completed offenses, but the legislature has said differently when they enacted 609.17. And just because there's an option for an attempted assault at a very low level with no intent to commit a higher level of offense, that doesn't mean you can't have a higher level of offense if the state can prove that you had that intent. And you have to have both the specific intent and take a substantial step towards committing that offense. And then through no fault of the defendant's own, that higher level of harm, thankfully for the victim, isn't inflicted. But that doesn't excuse the criminal liability for the defendant. And what I disagree with is appellant's argument that, well, then we're treating people the same, whether or not they inflicted great bodily harm or just attempted to, but now you're charging them with an attempt when they didn't inflict that level of harm. You're not. Because 609.17 says you can only be sentenced to half. So it's recognizing the fact that an attempt only comes with half of the statutory penalty. So we aren't treating people who complete a first degree assault the same as people who attempt to commit a first degree assault.
As I understand it, the idea of the way that the statutory framework is set up for assault and in terms of it, the level of the assault that you're charged with being driven by the consequences or the harm caused, it seems illogical to apply that to an attempt statute because it's never going to be, because it's not completed. We're assuming at the outset of the attempt statute that the harm was not completed. So it doesn't make sense to use the outcome or the harm caused as the means by which we decide whether or not the attempt occurred. Does that make sense?
I'm not sure what the question is. I mean, I think this, the state has the burden to prove that, and you're not going to have this in a lot of cases. I mean, there's going to be a lot of cases where you are left only with the level of harm that was inflicted because you don't have additional evidence that a defendant intended a higher level of harm. But sometimes you do.
Question I have. In the assault situation, attempting to commit an assault is really a completed assault, is it not?
It
is. You have a completed assault at the same time that you have only an attempted assault.
But if you are saying 609.17 can never apply to harm-based assaults, then you're never going to have anything more than a misdemeanor fifth degree level assault, no matter what a defendant initially intended.
So, counsel, in this situation, at trial, did the state have to prove, in proving an attempted harm assault, that great bodily harm actually occurred?
No.
All right. So, in a typical first degree assault, the state would have to prove that great bodily harm occurred, correct?
For a complete, had the state charged assault in the first degree without the attempt statute, correct. The state would have to prove great bodily harm occurred. But the state did not charge that. It charged attempted great bodily harm. So then the state has to prove that the defendant had the specific intent to inflict that level of harm, took a substantial step towards doing that, but the offense was not completed. But then the sentence is only half of what the completed offense would be for a reason, if that makes sense. So they are very different elements. And, you know, as I indicated, not all cases where the level of harm that we're charging as an attempt did not occur are going to provide facts where we can prove an attempt to a higher level. But there are times where they do. This case, for one, I sat and thought of all kinds of great hypotheticals. Thought it was very creative, but I think it will guide your analysis a lot better if you just look at page 9 of my brief, because in the footnote on page 9, I listed every case I could find on Westlaw where it was an attempted first-degree assault that was charged. And so right there, you have all kinds of factual scenarios where that charge fit.
You would agree with appellant that in all of those situations, none of those individuals challenged whether actual attempted assault harm was in fact a crime in Minnesota.
All except for one. And I did outline that in my brief. There was one case, I believe it was Jefferson, but I could be wrong. I believe it was Jefferson, where that was the challenge. And the court found it was a lesser included, so they never even got to the issue. But you are correct. And again, in my brief, I did not pretend that was the issue in any of those cases. I provide it for the background that, look, these are all the factual situations. If you try to think, when could this occur? There's some great examples, and I would highlight Robinson, Washington, McKay, Bauer, and Doman. I mean, Doman was a great example where someone plants a bomb in, I believe it was a wood pile. And so that, obviously, there was no harm because it was found before it exploded on the victim. But then if you just go under the attempt, you could have nothing more than a misdemeanor level assault for that under an assault charge. When in that case, the state felt it had evidence.
Couldn't you have a second degree assault? I mean, if you planted a bomb, so you have an attempted assault with a deadly weapon, doesn't the statute contemplate those very situations? That being, if you use a weapon, it's second degree assault. I guess. I'm getting at the question. It seems to me, or can you address whether or not the specific intent requirement of attempt is irreconcilable with the general intent of the fact that this statutory schema is the level of harm is what dictates the level of offense as it relates to assault.
There are some cases where because there's a weapon involved, there's kind of this intervening charge of an assault in the second degree, but that doesn't change the legal analysis of whether or not you can have an attempt to commit a higher level of harm.
So does your argument mean that whenever there's a charge where an offense is not completed, but the harm is obvious, such as a pipe bomb, that an attempt becomes a lesser included?
No.
That a defendant could force the jury and ask the judge to give an instruction on a lesser included of an attempted?
Sure, but I mean, then the lesser included,
half the penalty that otherwise would be there?
Perhaps, or they could ask for an attempted fifth degree assault if you're going under just that attempt provision under the attempt of the assault. But going back to your question about the mens rea and whether or not the intent is inconsistent, I have to say I disagree with appellant's characterization that the intents need to match up. The case law absolutely does not say the intent needs to match as far as specific intent and general intent. What the case law says, and that Zupitz and Schmidt are the cases cited by the appellant. I think there's another one more. I don't know if either of us cited that one. But what the case law says is the intent required or the mens rea cannot be inconsistent. Nothing says they have to match up. They cannot be inconsistent. And in this particular situation, assault harm, it's not that there's no mens rea. It's general intent. You have to have intended to commit the act. You can't accidentally bump somebody and it's an assault. You have to intend to commit an act to assault them. You just don't have to necessarily intend a certain level of harm. That's why just a flat old assault harm is general intent. To add the assault, it adds a specific intent element. In other words, it raises what the state has to prove. The state has to prove they specifically intended to commit the assault and inflict that higher level of harm. They are not inconsistent, they are overlapping. The specific intent to commit the assault in the first degree is inclusive of the general intent that was required to begin with for the underlying assault. So there is no inconsistency. They are not required to match. And I think the Supreme Court referenced that in a footnote in a recent case that I cited in my brief. I am blanking the name of it right now, but I cited it in my brief. It was just decided the day before I filed my brief this year. So they definitely don't have to match. I want to touch really quick on appellant mentioned during his argument and cited in his reply brief the Marshall case. This is the unpublished case he referred to in his argument a few minutes ago. That case does not support appellant's argument, and it doesn't because the Marshall case is based on the financial transaction card fraud statute, which is so entirely different than the structure of the assault statute. So it does not advance the argument. Financial transaction card, the intent to commit the crime is built into both the substantive crime and the penalty. There is only one provision for financial transaction card fraud, and then there is a subdivision that prescribes the penalty based on the amount of property taken or attempted to be taken. And it assigns the levels of offense, and it already includes that in there, where assault is not set up that way. There's different degrees. And the only place that attempt word is included is in the definition of all the different ways you can commit assault. But the level of offense is within each degree and does not include the word or attempted within the degrees of each assault.
Thank you, counsel.
Yep.
Okay. So with that, we will turn to appellant for rebuttal. There are 5 minutes on the.
If we can
hope that it might be.
Don't let me near any equipment that has electronics attached to it.
All right, with that momentary pause for technical difficulties, there are 5 minutes on the clock, and you may begin when you are ready.
Thank you. I just want to make a couple of very quick points on rebuttal. First, something that the respondent started with and then got into about, but we can prove this. Does mens rea have to match? What happens if we can prove it? Zubitz gives that exact answer, where the Supreme Court said, while the evidence indicates that Zubitz may have contemplated killing Hartley, specific intent to kill is not an element of second-degree manslaughter. The state may not make such intent part of the crime itself merely by introducing evidence of it. So the fact that the state has evidence of what her intent for the harm is doesn't mean that that's now the element in first degree assault. It's still just intending the act.
How do you respond to the point that your opposing counsel made, though, that the specific intent is actually inclusive of the general intent, that it's not inconsistent, it's just that it's a higher level of proof? I mean, what's the answer there?
Well, two parts. One, they are inconsistent because one is specific intent and one is general intent. The problem that we run into here is if you just want to say attempted assault and we ended attempted assault, specific intent, general intent, that's fine. The harm has no intent whatsoever. And that's where the disconnect is you're trying to graft a mens rea element where there isn't one before. And that's what the problem is.
But it says to the attempt crime. So I guess I'm still not seeing why it's problematic to require specific intent for the attempt.
It's okay to require specific intent for an attempt, but first degree assault harm.
It's not just okay, it's required. Isn't it?
Well, it's a requirement. And I'm just saying I don't disagree with the premise that an attempt requires specific intent. But first degree assault harm is a general intent crime. Specific intent means you want to intend a particular result, and first degree assault harm does not require you to intend any result at all. That's what Fleck says. The other piece of Fleck that's important here is when the state was mentioning their footnote with all of those cases. I agree, there aren't a ton of attempted first degree assault convictions. But the thing is that Fleck harmonized the law because pre-Fleck, there were some cases that said assault harm is specific intent. There were cases that said it was general intent. And Fleck is the case where the Supreme Court said, we're done with this. Assault harm is general intent. So of all the cases that the state cites there, only two are post-Fleck. One, that person wasn't even convicted of attempted first-degree assault. It was just a charge. The other was a plea case where they had other charges dismissed. They only appealed their sentence. Maybe makes sense if you don't want to undo an entire plea to only challenge your sentence. So it's not like this has been, you know, charged a ton since then, because Fleck clarified things on when you can actually, you know, treat or how you treat an assault harm. Just very briefly on the case the state was trying to come up with was Kitchich, I believe, was the recent Supreme Court case. That was answering a different question. The question there was whether attempted third-degree criminal sexual conduct and completed third-degree criminal sexual conduct were legally inconsistent. And to be legally inconsistent, you have to say an element of one would negate an element of the other. And I'm not saying that these are legally inconsistent. An attempted first-degree assault and second-degree completed assault, if that is an offense, they're not legally inconsistent. One doesn't negate the other. That's the question that Kitchich was answering. So it doesn't really help here, because that's not the question before the court. So I think if the panel then has no further questions, we would just ask that you reverse this conviction.
You want to address the sentence?
The sentencing issue?
Yes.
The denial of the departure?
Yes.
Yeah, very briefly, I think the problem there was when the district court is denying the departure, his sort of final words were, I don't have anything to hang my hat on. You don't regret this. You're not expressing remorse. Something to that effect on how you don't regret this. And that's not necessarily what you need to hang your hat on. What the court said in Soto, very specifically, is that remorse is not a necessary condition for a dispositional departure. It's one factor you look at, but it's not required. So the fact that Miss Oliver not expressing remorse for this offense doesn't mean that she, you know, doesn't satisfy the other trial factors. She was participating in treatment. She had a treatment bed. She has, you know, on the worksheet has one misdemeanor DWI. That was it for her criminal history. Very minimal. I think the state even acknowledges she was appropriate in court. So when looking at those other trog factors, remorse is never dispositive. And that's, you know, black letter law from Soto. And that's what the district court was really focusing on, was she didn't express remorse. She doesn't have to express remorse. She doesn't have to say she's sorry. She actually still has a constitutional right to, you know, remain silent in this case if she wanted to and not talk about it anymore. I see my time is up, but I don't know if the panel has other questions.
I don't think so. Thank you. Thank you to both counsel for the briefing and for the argument here today. This has been helpful. The case is submitted and an opinion will be issued within the statutory timeframe. Thank you.